From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 126, recorded live Friday, August 8th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks with jQuery creator John Rezik.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting down today with John Rezik, the creator of jQuery and JavaScript evangelist for Mozilla. Thanks a lot for taking the time to chat with me today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So you brought jQuery to the world in January of 2006 at BarCamp 2006, is that right?
Yep.
And that wasn't very long ago. It just seems like there's so much stuff on the internet that's happening so quickly that it feels like jQuery has always been around, but I'm looking at my calendar, and that was not very long ago.
Yeah, a lot could happen in just a couple of years.
Yeah. Was this something that came to you as a eureka moment? Did it had you been working on this for, you know, in the quiet for a long period of time before you brought it out?
I guess in the quiet. I mean, I guess traditionally I'm pretty much a hacker at heart. You know, I always have bunches of little side projects that I like to work on in my spare time, and a couple of these side projects were just tools that I had built that sort of came together in the form of jQuery. So, like, I was originally working on an animation toolkit that I was just playing around with, and then I was also working on a selector library for doing CSS selectors in JavaScript. And these two tools came together, and into just this little framework. That, so it was more of an amalgam rather than doing something from the outright.
A lot of people say that it fits together in such a natural way, in such a comfortable and maybe fluent is a cliche, but in a very fluent way. You know, when did it come to you that you should have the jQuery object be returned from every method and then chain things together?
One thing that I wanted was I wanted to have the shortest syntax possible for doing things within the document. And so this, you know, for manipulating, for attaching events, for modifying attributes, so all these things. I wanted to have the shortest physical code. So one, you know, sort of, I guess, hack that I had for doing this was this chaining, you know, returning the object itself. Because if I could do that, then it would allow the syntax to be even shorter. I guess it was more incidental that it ended up becoming actually usable and interesting, because it is, when I set out, it is more of just that I wanted it to just be really terse.
Really? So terseness was the goal, not fluency. You didn't want it to read like English.
Not explicitly. I mean, obviously I wanted it to still be understandable. Obviously, you can pretty easily sacrifice usability when you want to shoot for terseness. There's a lot of languages that are, you know, a good example of that. But I didn't want that to occur. So instead, I was wanted to see how far you could get without having cryptic method names. You know, while you're still having things that made sense.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you chain these kinds of things together, and you say something like $div.add, and then you start kind of popping back and forth between strings that have semantics and methods that have semantics, how did you find the balance between kind of the semantics that were tunneled into a string, like saying, you know, p.quote or div.test, versus breaking that out into methods. Because I suspect there's a lot of string parsing going on because you've got semantics for like CSS selector strings and things.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of tricky. There's certainly a lot of method overloading going on in jQuery. There's no doubt about that. Even down to the argument level there. But I think this is something that sort of grew as the API developed, you know, being able to define that, if a selector was ever coming in, then it should be a string, and it should also be able to accept these other types of arguments. So what happened is that internally in jQuery, there was a number of methods that started to be constructed that could accept any of these generic arguments, such as a CSS selector string or a DOM element or an array of DOM elements, and just all these varieties, and the output would always be the same. The output would always be an array of DOM elements. Mm-hmm. So that way, you could have these methods that could accept any of these inputs, and it would still have the same effective behavior.
Is there any, can you get in trouble with jQuery? I mean, is the syntax so open and flexible that you can write something that looks like it ought to work, but it just doesn't because the underlying engine just didn't see it coming?
At this point, we've worked out most edge cases, pretty well. I mean, we have a pretty strong, test suite here where we do check for a lot of these, for potential weirdness. So in most cases now, I think we're quite solid.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you do your development in? I've found, at least I'm a Windows guy, although I've got a couple of Macs in the house, but I really find that I'm pretty much stuck in, you know, Notepad and Firebug is where I live when it comes to JavaScript development. It just doesn't feel like on the Windows side that there's a full-fledged, world, for developing this kind of stuff, an IDE. Aptana is pretty good. The new version of Visual Studio is pretty good. But JavaScript for me still feels kind of loosey-goosey, which, it makes sense given the dynamicism of the language. But what do you use for your development of JavaScript applications?
I'm very similar. I mean, I use Firebug a lot, significantly within my development. But I don't use any IDEs in particular. I use a couple different editors. I use Vim. I also use an editor for OS X called SubEthaEdit. I like that one in particular. It allows you to collaborate in real time with other people.
Totally.
It's a pretty simple editor, but the collaboration is quite nice, and I've used that on a number of occasions. But I'm not really a bells and whistles kind of guy, so I'm just using straightforward tools.
Yeah. You do a lot of peer programming, though, that way?
It depends on the situation. If I'm doing the situation where I found it to be most useful is in pure web development. So yeah, if I'm working on a web page, and like there's one person editing the CSS, there's one person editing the JavaScript, or two people editing the CSS, that way you can all pull these files in together in real time, and mm-hmm. be able to work very dynamically in that manner.
Mm-hmm. I get the impression from reading your blog and from looking at the projects that you're very much kind of a top-down developer, that really it's the result that matters, and you visualize what you want the end result to look like, and then you kind of push down and make sure that the underlying libraries support that in an elegant way. Is that that's just, again, gleaning this from reading your projects, and you've got all these great examples where just little stuff like the Sparklines library, where you want the way that you implement this as simple as possible at the very top level. Mm-hmm. Is that how you work? Do you think about the example first? Do you think about the core first? Do you go from the outside in or from the inside out?
It depends. I guess it depends on the project. I can think of two projects in particular where I've worked from the outside in. One was where I recently released, I ported, there's this visualization programming language called Processing that's implemented in Java typically. And I ported that to JavaScript. So in that case, I worked top down. I took a whole bunch of demos that worked and I went through one by one and I made each demo work. And in order to do that, you know, I'd implemented, you know, a number of aspects, you know, a parser for the programming language, various aspects of the API, you know, and just going through piece by piece and getting more and more demos to work. I'm not sure if that's, I wouldn't say that's the best way to develop, at least in a holistic sense. Simply because there will inevitably be gaps in your development. But if you work, you know, you can work around this though.
Well, the reason that I ask that is that there's a thoughtfulness to jQuery as an example, and even the code for processing the processing JS is so clean that it makes me wonder what does that cleanliness come from? A real clear understanding of where you wanted to go from the inside out, where you visualized the design and you knew that it was going to turn out that way, or was it driven by requirements of the end result?
I guess typically it's more driven by requirements. And that
really?
I like to see things grow organically, and you know, just sort of as I you know, as I develop them, but then and you know, and kind of mold it as it comes towards a final result. I enjoy that style of development at least.
Yeah. Do you do a lot of refactoring? Is it very iterative?
Yeah, very much so.
Now, one of the neat things about jQuery, one of the things that I think made it take off was this notion of this of a plugin. But because JavaScript is so loose, is so flexible, it's a pretty loose definition. A plugin in jQuery, right, is just a method or a series of methods that also return the jQuery object. Is that right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
I was just wondering why it's been successful, because, you know, I was a prototype and, you know, Scriptaculous guy for the longest time, and then just something about jQuery, I don't know if it was the smallness of it or the richness of the plugin library. I'm trying to get an understanding of why is it that this particular library has taken off. And
you know. A big thing for me that's really grown on me is simplicity is just simplicity just rules in so many ways. It can, you know, it makes development simpler. You're able to leverage it more, and it's easier to learn. It's easier to document. It's in so many ways. It's I find a more optimal experience. So when you optimize for, you know, simplicity in your development and in your code, the, you know, the result just ends up being better all around. And this carries on into your plugin development. If you make adding in plugins and developing plugins really simple, there's going to be a lot of plugins. And which is the case with jQuery. There's hundreds and hundreds of plugins. And, you know, and even to the point where there's, you know, a lot of duplication. But I don't particularly think that this is necessarily a bad thing. Because when it's that simple for a developer to get in and start, you know, extending it in that manner, there's a lot of healthy competition. And you really see excellent code start to rise to the top, which I think is great.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman with a word from our sponsor. Do you know how to build Web 2.0 AJAX applications with Web 1.0 components? You really can't. If you want to do the next generation web applications, you'll need next generation components. Just like the ones that our friends at Telerik have got, they're RAD controls for ASP.NET AJAX. It's a huge pack of web controls built on top of ASP.NET AJAX that'll add previously impossible performance and interactivity to your next project. The new controls mirror the AJAX API from ASP.NET, so development is really straightforward. The client scripts are shared, so loading time is not a problem. You just set a couple of properties and you'll be able to automatically bind to web services for a really efficient operation. The new RAD editor from ASP.NET AJAX Telerik loads up to 4 times faster than before, and the new RAD grid handles thousands of records in just milliseconds. But as always, it's best to try for yourself. So you can visit Telerik.com/ASP.NET Ajax and download a trial. Thanks a lot. What are some of the plugins that you find yourself turning to that are ones that you didn't write? I mean, do you use interface? Do you use what are the plugins that you turn to?
There's a bunch. Definitely for user interface components, I'm almost always turning to plugins. I have very little desire to write another accordion or to write another tabs, component. Yeah. In those cases, thankfully, a lot of those now have been integrated back into jQuery UI, which is a project of ours where we maintain UI components. So I frequently refer back to jQuery UI. There's also a number of other plugins. There's one called a Live Query, which is quite cool. It makes the CSS queries in jQuery work live. So if you add new information to the document at any point, so like from an Ajax request or what have you, it will rerun the query again and run and affect it live, which is quite powerful. Another plugin that I use a lot is called the form plugin, and it's able to take any existing form and turn it into an Ajax form. I use that one all the time. It's just immensely useful. You can just drop it in, and instantly you've converted, in a way that'll degrade gracefully your form into something that's quite sexy.
Yeah. Were there any of these plugins, or were there while you're developing jQuery or watching the jQuery community kind of grow up around it? Were there any of these that caused you to say, "Wow, I didn't think that they'd be able to pull that off," and they did?
There's big projects. Just seeing large scale, people take on, these large, like there used to be this plugin, collection of plugins called Interface. It has since been superseded by jQuery UI. Those whole string of developments was quite fascinating to watch, and I think it's pretty cool to see people develop these large, I guess, sub projects of jQuery, and really see them take a life of their own.
At what point do you think that JavaScript as a language and the browser support got to the place where the jQuery was possible? Because JavaScript was kind of a mess across, not as a language, but implementation of it across the different browsers was really pretty bad for a long time. Was it IE7 and Firefox 2 that finally kind of pulled it together, or at what point did this become possible?
I think seeing at least what interested me about web development. When I started to, I've been doing web development for a long time now, but doing front-end development, I really started to focus on back in about 2004. And that was about the time at which Firefox was released. Mm-hmm. And I think that was, at least for me, a big turning point in my personal development. And so, big milestones, at least, was the release of Firefox, the release of Firebug. Having Firebug and the tools that it provided, especially like being able to have that console so that you can dip in and play with JavaScript, being able to profile my JavaScript, just and stuff like that, it is deceptively simple and just incredibly powerful. And those, dramatically changed how I worked.
What direction are you going to take jQuery and the team going to take jQuery for, 2.0? You've been kind of going forward with, 0.1, 0.01 type, 1.51, 1.52. Do you have some big master plan for 2.0? What would justify a major release like that?
The biggest release that we're working on right now is jQuery 1.3. And this is, as we usually do, we're focusing on performance, significantly so. We're looking at a number of areas that are very critical and trying to improve them. But the thing is that typically when you, if we were to look at, let's say, a 2.0 release, which we really aren't focusing on at the moment, is that that would tend to imply that there would be dramatic changes.
Uh-huh.
And so that would mean that there would be, you know, let's say, for example, dramatic API changes. And there are places in jQuery where the API could probably, you know, it could probably use some polishing, you know, maybe some more descriptive names or what have you. But I don't think having those changes making those changes is beneficial enough to warrant breaking a significant number of existing code bases. I think it's far more important at this point to promote stability, performance, and quality than to have any large overhauls. And I think what's important here is that the plugin architecture for jQuery really makes this possible. Because if there wasn't a way to easily snap in this new functionality, somebody would be forced to continually be adding and just continually growing and growing.
Mm-hmm. I know that you guys really focus a lot on performance. I mean, 1.26 was a, I misspoke earlier and I said 1.5. I was thinking about jQuery UI, but 1.26 has some major performance improvements. How are you figuring these improvements out? And I'm curious how often you get into a situation where you have to write an entirely separate chunk of code to make it fast on one browser versus fast on another, you know, a whole different branch to say, gosh, we can make it 100% faster on Firefox, but if we do, it's going to suck on IE or whatever.
Yeah, so, okay, so the first part is for figuring out where to improve, we really, so there's a couple of us. We have a bunch of tools that we use, including Firebug, but I wrote a tool recently for profiling jQuery applications. You stick this little library into your web page that uses jQuery, and after the page finishes running, it dumps a full report out, and it tells you exactly where all your time is being spent. So this tool has been really eye-opening, and we've been able to use this in a number of places. We can take this and we can insert it into, you know, major websites that use jQuery and get a feel for what is hurting them the most. And so because of this, for example, in 1.3, we're going to be making optimizations to our DOM modification code. So being able to append, prepend, insert before, insert after. And we've made some dramatic changes because we found that to be one of the largest bottlenecks in applications. That improvement is going to be quite good. What was the other half of the question, Trevor?
Well, I was wondering if you ever got yourself in a situation where you found that you could make something 100% faster or some percent faster, but if you did, it would negatively impact some other browser, and then you ended up with a different, basically with a switch statement in a different branch to say, you know, if IE, do it this way, else do it that way.
There are cases where that happens, and it is quite tricky, because generally speaking, we try to write our code in a very just agnostic way that doesn't rely upon a particular browser in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So, whenever we can, we try to determine ways in which we can make a smart guess about which will be faster. We would prefer not to have one browser benefit at the sacrifice of another. And I don't think we've ever had a case where it's been really dramatic. I mean, we may have been able to get like a dramatic improvement in one browser to a slight degradation in another, but I don't think we've ever had something quite extreme. But I mean, it's hard because you have to take it really on a case by case basis.
Yeah.
One thing that we were looking at here for 1.3 and that's going to be quite new and quite exciting, is that we're working to remove all uses of browser user agent sniffing. This is something that virtually all modern JavaScript libraries use. Saying, you know, if Internet Explorer do this, or, you know, if Firefox do this. And we've worked out some code that is going to make it possible that we don't have to do that anymore in jQuery. It's a lot of code, but we think it'll be really worth it. And it's going to help to promote some good practices to web developers as a whole. So we're really quite excited by that.
So this is a technique that other people are going to be able to use. It's going to raise the water level for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So, an important part of this is that, is what's called a feature simulation, and doing, so essentially testing a feature and seeing if it behaves like we expect it to. And if it does it, then, you know, then doing a fallback to something that works properly. And what's interesting about this is that you effectively remove the need for sniffing at that point, for making a blind decision about a browser. And generally, the code just becomes much, much better.
Huh. Wow. Well, I really think it's great the way that you guys really do this development out in the open, with particularly with the test suites. I mean, certainly open source projects that should be doing their work in the open. But you're so detailed in your differences between the different, showing your test suites and showing, you know, here are the 8 browsers we're testing on, and here's the diff between this version and that version. Some of the improvements in speed are just obscene, like the between 1.2.3 and 1.2.6, mm-hmm. some of the changes in JavaScript map, like mm-hmm. one of them was Opera 9 went from like 2.5 seconds to 95 milliseconds or something like that. It was just unreal amounts of improvement. And if you go down the entire sheet, there isn't a single place where something didn't get at least slightly faster.
Yeah. So, I guess that's an important point, is that an interesting part about having effectively a static code base. I mean, that's not to say that jQuery isn't going to change or add new methods. It's just that at this point we're changing very, very little of the API. And because of that, we can really just focus on iterating and improving what we have, fixing bugs, mm-hmm. fixing, you know, looking and digging and seeing where the performance pains are. And just continually improving and iterating and making it better, which I think is a really lucky situation, you know, just being able to just iterate like this.
Mm-hmm. One last question I wanted to ask you was, how do you decide what plugins to bring in? Is a plugin the best way for someone to get noticed?
It is. What's happened historically is, you know, people write a plugin, and in a couple cases there's been plugins that have just been, you know, immensely useful, and what we find are just people using them over and over again, and they're, you know, they're coming to rely on them, and other plugins are coming to rely on them. So mm-hmm. what we've started to do now is to take these really successful plugins and start to integrate them back into core. And this has been really useful for us. And it's been great for the plugin authors as well to see the code effectively, you know, graduate. The users benefit. And what's nice about this is that it serves as a testing ground, because since we don't actually have to introduce, you know, these new methods into the core, we can just say, oh, here, just use this plugin, let us know how it works, and, you know, eventually we can integrate it back in. And, yeah. You know, I think that it's ended up being a really, you know, successful model of development for us.
I think that's a really successful model for development, kind of for everyone. I think that looking, of course, hindsight is 2020, so looking back, it seems obvious, but the idea that if one makes it as just incredibly easy to extend one's open source project than rather than saying, you know, let's all fight about who's going to get commit access and who's going to be able to extend the core. Just make it incredibly extensible and then, you know, pick the right ones to pull back in. It seems like it's a more natural model for an open source project. It's just a more natural open source way of doing things. But that is all predicated on having an incredibly simple model for extensibility. Cool. Well, John, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk to me today about jQuery. And we'll have links to all the information about John and jQuery up on the show site. Thanks again.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me.
And this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.